From PCJ Radio International, this is Focus Asia Pacific. I'm Keith Pahom. Today we trace the story of the sari. Of course, anybody who's familiar with Indian culture will know that sari is a very big part of it. Sahedra Bari explores how it feels to wear one and asks what it meant for women like her mother. She discovers the unexpected ways in which clothing can be imprinted with feelings of nostalgia, love, and loss.
Reams of unfurled fabric, 6 yards of cyan-colored silk billowing on a washing line, dozens of cottons, chiffons, gauzes, and organzas neatly stacked between wisps of tissue paper. I'm Shahida Bari, and I grew up in a home spilling with saris. Today, I'm exploring what the sari means to the next generation of young Asian women. This is the story of my mother's sari. When my Bengali mother arrived in the UK in 1979 with 4 young children, she carried a suitcase of saris and wore them everywhere, at the grocers, in the post office, on the school run. And now that I write about clothes as an academic, their histories, how we wear them, and what they tell us about ourselves, I wonder why saris play so little a part in my own life. In this programme, I want to find out the story of the sari, how it feels to wear one, and what it means to women like my mother. But most of all, I want to find out about mothers and daughters, how the clothes we wear might tell us something about the experiences we share, and the lives we live differently. Like all good stories, this one begins with a shopping trip in East London.
So this is Green Street, and it's about 6 o'clock. It is 6 o'clock in the evening, which is when you imagine everything winding down, except that you can't walk down this street. It's heaving full of people and wailing children. So this place is just kind of kicking off. People will be shopping until 7, 8, maybe 9. So we're trying to cross this very busy East London road to head to a shop called Domini. And Domini is famous in our family because it's a very expensive, high-end sari / Asian boutique.
So I'm Almara and I'm Shahida's sister.
Okay, so how often do you wear saris?
I would say probably less often now than before, because I'm so busy with work.
Do you remember the saris mum wore when she first came to England? Because you were with her, you'd been born in Bangladesh, you were about 10 or 12, 10, 11, 12? 10. You were on that plane and you arrived in England with mum and dad and our brothers. And can you remember any of the saris that she brought with her?
Lots of them were floral saris. Yeah. They were cotton saris, sort of the if you like, the Bangladeshi style of saris that are cotton and lots of embroidery and colour work in it, yes.
Very 70s.
Yeah.
I've got a picture I'm going to show you. You've seen this picture. It's that old family picture. It's black and white. This one, and you're in it wearing like a really 70s outfit, and you've got a little satchel. And then mum's there wearing what looks like, it's black and white, but I can see how loud that sari
that is.
It's like a kind of jungle print sari. And I've got an idea it was like orange and green and things.
I think it was more white with red or,
I mean, I wasn't born, so I'm imagining this. But a lot of the time, especially when I think about her saris and I look at what I'm wearing today, which is not at all a sari, basically, I think there's so much about mum that I don't know, that so much of her life is so different from ours. Hello. This is my niece. Hello. Bilkis. Hello.
Where are you?
We're Dolly. Turn left 200 metres down Green Street, and it's a shop called Dolly, D-O-L-I.
It's in the corner.
On the corner. About 200, maybe 300 metres. Okay, see you. Bye. When I go, I'm a long
way from sight. Hi, my name's Bilkis Mia. I'm 28 years old.
And you're my niece.
And I am Shahida Bari's niece. Shahida Bari's niece.
I can't call
you auntie, that's why I would never say your name.
So you can call me auntie.
Can I call you auntie?
Do you know how to wear a sari if you're on your own and had to put a sari on? Would you have a clue?
No, I don't even know which end is which. Have you ever opened a sari? Someone bought me a silk sari once. Mark, they bought me a silk sari once from India. Beautiful, expensive. I lent it to my mate for a wedding, who is English. She didn't have a monkey's either. She had no idea what to do. She had to go into a shop on the way to the wedding to get everyone to tie it on, and she gave up.
Oh, no.
And I would feel the same. Like, if you gave me a sari, whether it's a 6-yard or a 9-yard, I would have no clue.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm being honest, I've tried before to just wrap it around myself. You can't. Yeah. It's to do with, like, the petticoat, then you get the bunch, and then you scrunch, and then you
the
munch. There's loads of adjectives. Like, I don't know. Verbs. I wouldn't know where to start.
Yeah. But, like, how do you feel about the fact that we don't know how to wear a sari? We don't know how to put it on.
Can't you hear me, mama, call? Can't you hear me trying?
At its simplest, a sari is one long stretch of fabric, measuring between 4 to 8 metres in length, traditionally worn by Asian women from Pakistan to Tibet. Saris encircle the waist, are often pleated, and then swept across the upper body with folds of fabric draped over the shoulder or veiling the head. There are more than 80 different ways of wearing a sari, and they've been worn in the Indian subcontinent since the first millennium. It's a garment woven into the histories of the countries from which it comes.
This is a very lavish sari. Obviously, you know, that distinctive element is this vast expanse of gold that you see on the pallu.
Divya Patel at the V&A is curating an exhibition on the fabrics of India, due to open later this year.
And it's got this floral motif.
It's got floral motifs. It's also got the parrot.
Where's the parrot?
So you see just above.
Oh, just...
Just on each one of those big buttas, you see a little parrot.
Like a tiny green parrot perched on the top of a huge
Which then
plant.
Also seems to be holding a flower, so I'm not quite sure what they're trying to do there, but it is a very beautiful parrot. The sari has always been seen as a very elegant, unstitched garment, a symbol of national identity. It has gone through changes. While it's a symbol of national identity, it also shows regional diversity in the way it's been woven, the way it's been worn. So you have differences in the way that someone in Gujarat might wear it, to someone in Bengal might wear it, to someone in Maharashtra might wear it. The way it's made, the inclusion of synthetic fabrics, all has changed the way we look at saris, but it's still, you know, this amazingly elegant item of Indian dress.
The saris in this exhibition and the saris that form part of the collection at the V&A are exhibited as artefacts, as though they are art objects. And then the kind of the flip side of them being everyday garments is that also they're produced by artisans, that they are works of art in lots of ways.
Yeah, I mean, it is part of the V&A to show how these things are made. The reason that we have them in the collection is because they tell us about the artisans who made them, the incredibly complex weaving techniques that went into them. And yes, they are shown as art objects, rightly so, because of the great skill that goes into creating them. You know, it can take months and months to create this one garment. And if you're thinking in particular of a Khadi sari that we're going to have in the exhibition, you know, Khadi is hand-spun thread that is then hand-woven into fabric. So you can imagine the labour-intensive skills that go into that. And Khadi, because of its nationalist symbolism, you know, it was a great symbol of the nationalist movement, makes that sari in particular very symbolic of many, many things, not just its contemporary fashion element, but its national identity and the idea that it is completely hand spun and hand woven.
And where's your interest in saris come from? Is it your mother?
It is indeed my mother, yes. I was born in East Africa, my mother grew up there, and she, even though I say so myself, was very discerning in the saris that she bought. She didn't buy many, but what she bought were very beautiful hand woven silks. And so I have those, and I love to wear them, and she's been my inspiration in terms of sari.
Are there particular saris that you can remember growing up with her wearing.
I always remember her making good choices. If I went shopping with her, I knew what she would go for. I knew there were particular colours that she liked, but that she would always buy something that was slightly unusual. So she obviously had a flair for looking at unusual designs, and also appreciating something that was more handmade rather than machine made.
Dominique is like a department store, so it opens with these electric doors and it has this rather grand staircase, two floors, and it's lit like we're in the House of Fraser or Selfridges even.
Those days when I used to like literally obsess, and I used to go through and like just try everything on. I was obsessed for a while with Dominique.
But why are you not obsessed with Dominique anymore?
When will I wear this ever again? I'd wear this once and then that's it. Yeah. And I wouldn't even have enough storage space to put. I mean, where am I going to put that?
Because they're huge,
it's
right?
Huge. Yeah. Like,
folds and folds of fabric.
Yeah, so it's reams of fabric. I've got nowhere to store this. And also, I feel guilty every time I look at this. I start feeling guilty about it. Because it's so expensive and so beautiful and I'm not using it. And I'm not, like, wearing it to any of these events or... You know, when I have a ball or a Christmas do, I should really be wearing this, but I don't. I just wear my pretty dress that I've got.
But apparently this is our culture, right?
Yeah, I'm proud of it. Like, I'm really proud. Like, when I went to Bangladesh, the stuff that people were wearing, I went in Bangladesh in November, people were so beautiful. Like, even the old women were wearing, like, bright purple, silk brocaded saris. Even my gran... She had a beautiful sari on and, you know, she introduced me and I just felt like, oh, I'm not glamorous. I was actually wearing these trousers as well. And I was just wearing these trousers, a Primark top, and I was just like, oh.
We should make an effort. That's
we should
we need
really
to
make
do.
An effort.
These days, saris come in infinitely various colours and fabrics with an array of accessories, matching petticoats, hems and blouses that are often custom made. The heart of the sari is its tail, variously called the palu or achal, the long last stretch of fabric. You can tie your keys to it, use it to wipe a child's grimy face, or it can be heavily decorative, dotted with precious stones.
So this is a new, I would say, a modern sari.
Modern sari.
Yeah.
All the displays.
Yeah, so this has also got laser work on it, isn't it?
Yeah.
With stones.
It's a cutwork. This is called cutwork.
This is called?
Cutwork.
Cutwork, so that's... See, this is new to me because... But then again, I don't wear stonework saris that much. But again, this is, I would say, would be a trendy one for younger people, isn't it?
And the saris we're used to are the pleated ones.
Yeah, that's more common for Bengalis to wear it.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's a traditional Bengali way of wearing sari, which is without the pleat as well. And normally that's usually worn... Well, it's a cotton sari as opposed to a...
Is that how I wear
like
it?
Like a silk,
no. Oh, right. No. So how do I wear it?
No, we have pleats.
So, yeah, but what do you put it on me? Because you dress
pleated,
me, don't you?
It's a pleated way, which
so
is
you
the
do
more
put
common.
Pleats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm saying that there's another traditional way of wearing the sari the Bengalis in the villages would wear.
Yeah.
Would be a different way to say that if they went to city.
But this is the crux of the problem, is that you and I, Bilkis, don't know how we
I
wear
don't know
our saris.
How I wear it.
Someone like, dresses us in.
Yeah. Like the amount of times you've poked me with safety pins because you're trying to tie things onto me.
That's because when you, it's an art. I think wearing a sari is an art.
I've picked out quite a lot of different fabrics. Although once you know how to wear a sari, I think technically you can wear any fabric. There are some that are easier to wear than others.
Journalist and broadcaster Michelle Hussain understands the art of wearing a sari, and I visited her at home to find out about her collection.
I think there is something timeless about the sari. That is an immense part of its attraction to me. You don't have to worry about the style of a sari. A sari is a sari. So, yes, there's a question of the pattern that it will be in and the type of fabric. Wearing a silk is very different to wearing a chiffon or a cotton sari, which I remember my grandmother wearing throughout the heat of the summer in Pakistan. Cotton saris are quite voluminous and they are actually fantastic in the heat, but they're not the kinds of saris that we would wear in this country today. I think for me there's also an emotional connection to them because it is very much the garment that I've seen my mother and my aunt and my grandmother before them wear. And it actually is a very easy thing to wear. You don't have to worry too much about it once you know how to wear it, which I know is a barrier to some people. I was taught early on, but at the same time, when I remember how my grandmother used to pleat her saris and her fingers would fly back and forth, and she would, you know, in about 20 seconds, she'd have all her saris, her sari pleats beautifully lined up. It takes me ages, and I sometimes have to pleat and re-pleat. But in a sense, that's part of the charm, and it's really the only bit you do need to worry about. And you can re-pleat it and re-tug it back into place very easily. You know, in the ladies, it's not something you need to fuss about too much.
Do you have a favourite sari of your collection?
My mother found this beautiful gold leaf silk, which I think is made with the kind of gold thread that is not really available today. So it was again something that got pulled out of a trunk, and I remember wearing that.
It's rather bridal looking, actually.
Yes, yeah. And although I didn't wear it on my wedding day itself, I wore it at a party to celebrate our wedding not long afterwards, and I've never worn it since. It's not the kind of thing that I can imagine. I may never wear it again, actually, because, you know, I think perhaps that will, it will be, so I haven't even looked at it for a long time, actually. And someday I suppose I'll show it to my sons, although whether they'll be interested in what their mother wore.
Michelle, you need to get it dry cleaned before you shouldn't, because there's a stain on that side.
I told you had higher standards than I do. You see, this has been just put away and not looked at.
Well, the first photo is my mum in the flat in Dhaka, the first flat.
Novelist Monica Ali grew up with a white English mother and a Bengali father. Her mother learned to wear saris when she visited Bangladesh in the 60s.
And she's leaning up against a wall and looking quite wistfully over her shoulder at the camera. And the drape on her sari, the one that goes over the shoulder, is really quite long. It comes down to the middle of her calf, which is really longer than she would have wanted to get it, but it's quite a tricky thing to get right. And this second photo is in a park, and she's standing in front of some very tall bamboo.
Yeah.
And the drape on the shoulder this time, it's shorter, but it's not lined up neatly.
Yeah. Does your eye recognise that? Could you tell, looking at that she's not wearing it quite correctly?
Yes, yeah. So, when I was a teenager, sometimes I used to try on her saris. She had a few left over that she brought with her back from Dhaka. Not much, because there wasn't much that they could bring, but she brought a few silk saris. So sometimes she used to show me how to wear them and try them on, so yeah.
Was she comfortable in the sari?
Yeah, I've talked to her about that, and she said, yes, once she got used to it, she enjoyed wearing it, and there wasn't really another option. She couldn't wear, you know, what were people wearing here in the 60s? They were wearing mini skirts, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, she couldn't wear that. It would have been very difficult for her to get on in society if she hadn't adopted the dress. And she said that she actually enjoyed wearing it. And there's just one final photo I've got here, which is
amazing.
First one in colour. My father, me and my brother in the middle, sitting in a park somewhere in Dhaka. And that's another silk sari that actually was one of the ones that she managed to salvage and bring back with her.
And she's wearing really cool shades as well, so it's good.
Cool shades. I think she looks great in that photo. But, you know, I was asking her the other day if she's got any of those saris left, and she hasn't. They all got used up or lost or something. I remember one she brought back was a black silk one. It was absolutely beautiful silk. And when I was at Oxford, you know, they have an end of year ball at Oxford, and people spend quite a lot of money sometimes on ball gowns. And of course, I didn't have the money to buy a ball gown. I thought, what can I do? And my mum said, you can take this black, beautiful black silk, and you can make yourself a gown. So that's what happened to that one. I made a gown out of it.
Yeah. And what about for you've got a daughter, don't you?
A 14-year-old daughter.
Okay.
Yes.
So that's the age where you might suddenly have a kind of spark of interest in a kind of exotic silk sari or something. Does she have any interest in it?
Well, you know, He has more interest in Topshop.
Mama, mama, I fear you reared me wrong.
When I first started in the 60s, hippies were wearing oriental kaftans brought back from Afghanistan or Morocco. In other words, the real thing. I remade them as fashion, adapting the basic designs and introducing new fabrics and ornamentation. I was so steeped in Orientalism that I suppose it came naturally.
That's Venetia Porter, reading from the scrapbook written by her mother, Thea Porter. Thea Porter was the inventor of 60s boho chic. Eastern fabrics have always been a part of Western fashion, and I met Venetia at the Fashion and Textile Museum in London to talk about her mother's gowns.
I have a favourite garment here, actually, which is a dress, a gypsy dress.
Can we look at it?
Yeah.
Maybe we can walk. Yeah. We can walk and talk, and you can tell me about it.
Okay, all right. Well, there are two of my gypsy dresses in here. One that was made for my 21st birthday, which is white with these lace sleeves and a kind of antique top, which looks a little bit like chainmail.
It's utterly gorgeous.
It's really, really gorgeous. And for my 21st birthday, she took over this restaurant called the Jardin des Gourmets, and everybody had to come dressed as a bride or a groom. But Andrew Logan, who was a great friend of hers, who's this amazing sculptor, came dressed as a bride and a groom. So that's one of mine. But I have another gypsy dress upstairs that I'm really fond of. They were, because I used to go to a lot of parties and I love to dance, and they are great to dance in because they're something like 5 meters. Of fabric in the skirt, cut on the cross, and it's absolutely incredible when you dance in them, because they're also, the fabrics are so light and with the trim and so on. What's been really amazing for me is when I talk to people who had who still have their Thea Porter garments, they treasured them because they made people feel so wonderful. That's what she wanted to do. She wanted people to feel wonderful when they put on a dress. They felt great, and that was it. She always said, you must put your dress on and then just forget about it.
Do you feel differently about them as you're older, and as Thea is no longer here, and do you feel differently about them? Do you care for them differently?
Well, I have to say, I don't wear them very, very often. I just have one or two things that I wear. I do feel differently about them now with this exhibition, because, all those things that kind of sat in my cupboards and drawers and boxes, have just, come out, and they're singing again. It's just lovely.
My mother's style, I would say, was very classic, simple, structured, well put together, well thought through, and she really plays to her shape and has always thought very carefully about clothes and the way she presents herself.
Frances Corner, the head of the London College of Fashion, on how her mother influenced her own understanding of dress. I wondered if fashion designers had been influenced by their mothers too. She talked to me about the Japanese fashion designer Yohji Yamamoto and his mother, Fumi.
She was a dressmaker, and obviously she brought him up because his father was killed in the war. And he would talk about sometimes the fact that when she would walk away, he's always been interested in women's backs and designing for their backs rather than their fronts. And that was part of that memory of his mother. So I think that there is this influence, where you have obviously a mother who was very much involved in the discipline that you're interested in and the creativity. And yet I think also allows you and allows a son to then have the creative space to become a great designer.
I love the idea that the master tailor has a mother behind him, that she is somehow present in the garments he designs. But there's something else here, something haunting, in the idea that clothes can be imprinted with the most powerful memories. The image of a mother's back as she is walking away, perhaps not ever to return.
There is also something quite sad, isn't there, when somebody's died, the legacy of the clothes, because somehow they are of the person, but they also, that person has gone. And I think that, we all feel that is the very difficult part, isn't there, after someone's died. Actually, how do you deal with those clothes? Because it's not very easy to just package them up, and it's something that people struggle with.
The sari envelops you. It conceals and encases your body. For me, it has a mystery, a secrecy, that hints at the unguessed at parts of a life my mother led before me. And yet the sari makes me feel safe too, because I associate it with her body and the world she made for me. And now, as I struggle to keep hold of the sari, the rituals and the memories around it, I fear losing the world it signifies, and her too.
Can we look at that pale yellow? Is it the yellow one? Not that one.
No, that one. The one you're holding.
It's like no work on it. It's just cotton.
This is cotton.
So our mum is 65. What would you dress a 65 year old?
That's something that we should wear.
I think mum's got this sari. I've seen her wear one like this. Yeah. It's got tiny paisley, or like kind of teardrops.
Teardrops. But that's more subtle. So it's telling a statement, really, that, you know, this is a respectable sari for somebody who's older.
You've bought saris for mum, and I've been with mum where I've paid for a sari, but I've never picked out a sari for her. I've never done it.
But that's where you're probably different from me, whereas I've gone and chosen and bought.
Well, maybe I should buy her a sari. Maybe we should buy her a sari.
I'm going to buy her a yellow one, though.
I set out to find out about saris, to think about mothers and daughters, how powerful, painful and complicated that relationship can be. What I realised, unexpectedly, is that our clothes connect us all, grandmothers and daughters, sisters and nieces even.
When I think about my mother and think about my aunt, all the women that have been important to me, all the occasions for which we have photographs and the memorable family occasions, they're always in their saris. And I think that it is just, it's part of who we are.
And that's all we have time for in this edition of Focus Asia Pacific. If you wish to contact us to let us know what you think of the program, we'd love to hear from you. Our email address is very simple. It's focus@pcjmedia.com or pcjmedia@gmail.com. On behalf of the whole team, I'm Keith Powell, wishing you well, saying so long, take care. We'll see you again very soon. Bye-bye.